Rainmaker FM.
This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to The Showrunner, where we have one goal: teach you how to develop, launch, and run a remarkable show. Ready? And we're back. Welcome to episode number 103 of The Showrunner. I am your host, Jared Morris, VP of Marketing for Copyblogger and Studio Press, as well as the host of the brand new podcast called Sites, which delivers weekly tips on building better WordPress websites. And you can check that out at sites.fm if that sounds interesting to you. And I am joined today by my trusty co-host, Johnny Naster, host of Hack the Entrepreneur, best-selling author, and renowned instructor to many on how to master the often elusive business mindset. You can learn more about Johnny and his many resources for helping you tweak your mindset at hacktheentrepreneur.com. Johnny, it's great to be back. We just had a chance to talk and catch up a little bit, and now we're here ready to do a new episode of The Showrunner. How are you?
I am doing great.
Good.
Doing great. It's been a while, so it might take a bit to get back into this, but I'm more than ready.
It has been a while. This is the longest that we've gone without recording an episode in like over 2 years, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, and as much as you try and like tell people to not get out of the habit of something because it's so hard to get back into it, like every week that passed, it seems so much easier each week to just be like, no, let's just wait one more week, one more. Yeah. It's terrible. It's like, that's really why you have to keep that consistency, because falling off, it's hard to get back on, I find.
It is. But here we are. We're back on and we're excited to be here with you. So thank you for waiting with us. We had some other things that we were doing in the meantime. We actually have a fun announcement here coming up that we'll tell you about soon. But either way, we're excited to be back. We're excited that you are here. The Showrunner is brought to you by StudioPress Sites, the complete hosted solution that makes WordPress fast, secure, and easy without sacrificing power or flexibility. For example, you can upload your own WordPress theme, or you can use one of the 20-plus beautiful StudioPress themes that are included, and just one click away, explore all the amazing things you can do with a StudioPress site, and you will understand why this is way more than traditional WordPress hosting. No matter how you'll be using your site, we have a plan to fit your needs and your budget. To learn more, visit rainmaker.fm/studiopress. That's rainmaker.fm/studiopress. So, Johnny, in the meantime, while we were gone, we did continue to send out our weekly newsletter, which of course, folks can get on if they go to showrunner.fm. And a couple of weeks, we actually put out a call for questions. I thought, you know, taking a little break, it was a good opportunity to see what was on the mind of Showrunner subscribers. And, you know, whenever you do something like that, you're not quite sure what the response is going to be. But the response was overwhelming. And we got a ton of questions back. And so we've put all those into a Google Doc, and you and I have decided that basically for the foreseeable future, we're just going to take one of those questions and turn it into an episode. I mean, these are the topics that you, the Showrunner listener, that you're thinking about, that you want to know about, and that's what we want the show to be about. So we're just going to answer these questions one by one, and they are really in-depth questions, you know, some, you know, and they kind of vary the levels. You know, some are more beginner questions, some get into a lot more the kind of question that an experienced showrunner would ask that's kind of been down the road a little bit. That's what today's question is. And so some great questions, and I'm excited about kind of trying out this Q&A style here for a little bit. I think it'll be fun.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun too. And yeah, the questions do vary a lot, which I dig, which is really cool, because this one's based on a further sort of, I guess, place you would be as a showrunner rather than just starting out. So this is going to be cool. I think, yeah, I mean, we know we're supposed to answer questions of our audience, and so now we actually will answer a question. And what better way to do it?
Yeah, instead of guessing, we have literal questions that we're going to answer. So,
but what's this announcement you were talking about?
So the announcement is something that you and I have been talking about for a while, and it's reopening the showrunner course, which we are going to do. Now, we don't have the exact date yet. We've talked about doing it in mid-August. We've talked about doing it in mid-September. So you and I still need to nail down the date and nail down some of the details. But it's going to happen, either late summer, early fall. It will happen, and so we want to let folks know to get on the wait list. And the way that you get on the wait list is to go to showrunner.fm. There's an email sign-up form right there. It's the same email sign-up form that will get you our weekly newsletter email, that will get you our beginner's guide to launching a successful podcast, and the really cool autoresponder course that you put together, Johnny, that asks people some really in-depth questions that they need to be answering, whether they're beginner showrunners or experienced showrunners. But we will, as we always do, give the first opportunity to get on to get into the course to the people who are on the wait list. And so go to showrunner.fm. That way you can find out the latest information, find out when we launch, get the best offer, all of that good stuff, because we're excited. We're excited about reopening it back up. So we want to make sure that you have advance notice and have plenty of time to get on the wait list.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's been too long, I want to say. It's been too long since we recorded, Jared, and it's been too long since we've opened up the course. So I think we're ready for both.
It's been too long. I feel like you need to record like a punk version of a song. It's been too long. And we can use that.
But before we do that, let's get to this week's question.
Yes.
Shall we?
Yes. Let's get to this week's question. And here's the fun part about this week's question is this week's question actually comes to us from someone who was part of the first Showrunner course launch. So this question comes to us from Julie Duffy Dillon. She is a registered dietitian, a speaker, and a writer, an eating disorder specialist. And she has channeled this passion that she has for the topic and all of the training and expertise that she has into hosting a podcast. And so she is the host of the Love Food Podcast. And she sent us this message. I'll read it now. Hi, Johnny and Jared. Thank you for your note, and I have a question that I would love some insight on. A little background. I have a niche podcast, Love Food, that helps folks with a complicated relationship with their food, helps them rewrite their fate. I did your podcasting course and launched in January of 2016. This training helped position me within my industry, yet differentiate from what was already out there, and the results have been outstanding. I'm getting more downloads and opportunities every month than I thought possible, so thank you. I have had moderate success with sponsors, yet using my episodes for the next few months to sell my own soon-to-be-launched e-course. With all that being said, I would still like to find more ways to monetize my show. Luckily, I have listeners who are quite engaged and responsive. Here's where I need help. I publish episode number 75 this week and wondering how long I should keep all my episodes up on iTunes. Should I keep all of them there even as I get to 100, 200, 300? Or do you recommend as a way to monetize moving some behind a paywall? Any insight is appreciated. Thank you for helping me be a showrunner. Warmly, Julie. I will first say, Julie, thank you for helping us be showrunners and being part of the course and sending in this question, but also just setting such a great example with your show. I've actually been a subscriber of Julie's show. I really enjoy listening to it. It's extremely helpful, extremely insightful, and it's been great to watch what Julie has done with the show and watch it evolve over time. So congratulations on that, and it's exciting now to see her looking forward. I mean, you get to episode 75, you've really done something. I mean, I don't know what percentage of shows get to 75 episodes, but my guess is that it's probably less than 1% of shows make it that far. And so that in and of itself is a huge achievement that's worth celebrating. And now it's exciting to kind of chart that next course. So this is a fun time in Julie's evolution as a showrunner.
I love how she's like, by default, it's like, should I keep all of them there even as I get to 100, 200, 300?
Yeah, she's thinking
like,
big.
Obviously, that's what's happening. Like this, I'm not fizzling on this at all. I love that attitude. That's definitely like a showrunner attitude.
Yes. Yes, it is. So let's dive in here and answer. And, you know, John, I'd love to get your insight on this, because you have dealt with this exact issue with Hack the Entrepreneur. And I have two with the assembly call. I think we just did episode 326, I think, last week. The difference is that the assembly call, my post-game show for IU basketball, is very timely. It's not evergreen content. So frankly, like once we do an episode a week later, it's not really relevant outside of for like the few crazies that may want to go relive the post-game show from a game that happened in the past, which would really be a whole other level. Just go back and watch the game if you're that excited about it. But, you know, so it really doesn't matter. We could keep like the previous five episodes in there. People aren't really going back and listening to our archive. But shows like Julie's, shows like yours at Hack the Entrepreneur, where the content is evergreen, it's a totally different ballgame because there's so much that you can do with your archive. So maybe we can start this by just you kind of providing the example from your own show of what you've done and how you've handled, you know, moving past the 200, 300 episode mark.
Yeah, for sure. So when did I start? I started, I think, around the same place, around 75 episodes or 100, where I really started to also think this way. And I toyed with the idea of the paywall, but then I chose to not go that way. So what I started doing first was I started transcribing episodes. And I put those episodes up on my site on show notes to try and get some of that keyword traffic from Google, which didn't actually really work very well at all, that part of it. But there was still value to it, I found, with the transcripts, because then I took 50 of them and I turned them into what became a best-selling book. So to me, there's ways to, I guess it's repurposing and finding different ways to use those archives. So people have listened to those shows on the way through. You've probably gotten feedback saying people are responsive to them. So that's a good thing. And most people won't listen to all of your episodes all the way through. If somebody discovers you now in episode 75, they probably won't go back through everything. But if you could, I think, sort of summarize or bring things together in that way, like with a book, to me, it makes sense because it's 50 episodes summarized by the hack, and then I get to write around them. So if people want to hear more about one of those episodes, by all means, they can find that and track it. So I think it gives people depth. And then the next way I did it was I put together Hack the Entrepreneur's top 10. So I picked 10 episodes and I put them on a completely separate feed, a completely separate page that I push people to when they get onto my email list and for my Start Here page. So it kind of, when you just discover me and you find me, whether that's through a podcast or through Google or through something I wrote, then you end up on my Start Here page. And from there, it's like, here's where you should get started to kind of get a feeling for the show and for what we're trying to accomplish here, because these are my 10 most popular or best, as I call them, episodes at that point.
To be clear about that, did you pull those 10 episodes out of the main feed so they're only available in the new feed, or are they basically available in both?
They're available in both. The only difference was that I pulled all the ad spots out of the episodes. When they were originally run, they had ads. I pulled all those ad spots, and then I got one sponsor, FreshBooks sponsored just the top 10, and we put in new ads there. There were actually like 10 tips from FreshBooks for entrepreneurs, which coincided with the top 10, and so each episode had its own number of tip.
That's an awesome idea.
Yeah, so it worked really well in that sense. It's a great place for people to start. It's reusing the content, but it's also pulling out the best parts so that people can – it's hard, right? I mean, I'm at 350, so somebody discovers me today, 350 episodes. It seems like a lot, but at the same time, you could just kind of brush it off because it's just a number and you just ended up on this site, so whatever. But it's like top 10. Oh, that's cool. And then like if you find – the Seth Godin episode, and you go back and you're like, wow, this was like 2.5 years ago. Then it's kind of, it sinks in, I think. And I think it really pushes people into the archives, but also gives them a better sense of what you have accomplished and created as the showrunner itself. So those are the two ways that I've done it. And I find that focusing on like discoverability and enabling people to discover more of your archive rather than blocking it off behind a paywall, to me, was the better way. To me, show running and podcasting is about people finding you and being able to discover what you have created. And then you already have a monetization, which is your course, which is great. and more people will purchase from you and buy your course and want to learn from you, the more that they sort of know, like, and trust you, and you get them to do that by sending them through your best stuff that you've already created.
Yeah, I think it's really important to take a big picture view with this question, because you really have to kind of analyze the benefits and the costs of each choice. So let's say that you're going to have a podcast and you're not going to have any other possible way of making money off of that podcast. Then, yeah, possibly, you know, putting some of those episodes behind a paywall and removing them from your archive, that could actually be the way to maximize your revenue that you get from your podcast. But I think, you know, that certainly doesn't describe you, Johnny. It certainly doesn't describe Julie. And I think for most people who are following the advice that we give on the Showrunner and who are smart about their podcasting strategy, they're not putting all of their revenue eggs into the podcasting basket, right? They're using it as a part of an overall content marketing mix, and maybe using it to drive people to a course or to an ebook or to, you know, help them develop authority that gets people to hire them for services or for networking. Like, there's so many other reasons why you would want to have a podcast. And so I think for most people, in most cases, the benefit of having a huge archive that is freely available via search in iTunes and in other podcast directories, the benefits that you're going to get from that are going to outweigh what you might lose, because having them out there doesn't give you that scarcity of being able to say, hey, you know, you can listen to the last 10 episodes for free, but if you want the archive, you have to go pay. Because I think what you'll find is that you will, by having all of those episodes out there, each one is basically a piece of podcasting real estate that people can come upon when they're searching for a specific topic. And that can establish a great relationship with a listener. So, for example, there are two topics that I've been really interested in learning about recently. Obviously, parenting. I've mentioned that before on the show. You know, my daughter's 11 months old. I've just been devouring parenting podcasts. And a lot of times the way that I end up on a podcast is by searching for a specific topic. So I may be searching for, you know, the impact of learning a language at a young age for a child, or, you know, how to fix common sleep problems with a child. And so I will search for that in my podcast app and then look through the episodes that come up and find the ones that are relevant. And there have been so many shows where I found one, it's an episode from 2 years ago, but this is evergreen content. It doesn't really change. And I like the episode. I become a subscriber, and, you know, of the podcast, and then I become a subscriber of the email list, and then maybe I buy their book. That's happened several times. Again, all because that episode was freely available and came up in search. Same thing, Stoicism. I've gotten into that just over the last couple of weeks. And so I've been looking up old podcast episodes there. Same thing. It's evergreen content. So it doesn't really matter if this episode was 3 years ago. I find it. And if the show is still going on, now I subscribe and I'm part of that show. And so I think, Julie, for your specific case, and again, I think for most people, this will apply. You want to get the benefits of those episodes being out there and being searchable and being able to be found, because for a topic like yours, it's going to continue to be relevant. To maximize this, one thing that you might want to do is go back through and do a quick episode audit. Because maybe your first 10 episodes when you were new at this, you weren't thinking about kind of the ways to SEO your episodes, and you didn't put keywords in your titles because you just weren't thinking that way. Maybe now you go back through and go edit some of those episode titles and get the keywords in. You know, step into the shoes of an audience member and think, okay, I've got this episode about this topic with this, you know, expert or whatever it is. What question, what desire would this episode really satisfy that someone might search for? And make sure that those terms are there in the title so that it's going to come up more likely. And I think this is probably an overlooked way to drive additional traffic to your podcast, and not just random traffic, but people really looking to answer a specific question. And if you can deliver the answer that people have, especially for a topic, Julie, as important as yours, I mean, people who are going to search for the topics of your show, you know, they really have an issue, and it might be a lifelong issue for them that they're looking for insight on. And if you can deliver just a little bit of help, they are really going to be locked in. And so you want to get people at that moment when they're really searching, when that need, the need to fulfill this question or this quest is at its most acute. And that's where you really get that benefit. And so I think you really better have a good reason to pull those episodes out of the archive and cost you that opportunity if you're going to do it. And I think in most cases, you don't want to do that.
So here's one other thing that I forgot to mention, Julie, which was when I was going through this process of what to decide as well, there was an interesting, and I mean, looking at your site, it's you are either fairly savvy behind a website or else you have somebody who is. And so there's this interesting way to make it like put your content behind a quote unquote paywall, yet also keep all the benefits that Jared is just talking about, which is putting it behind an email paywall. In my space, there's a show called Mixergy. And all of his older shows, I believe beyond like five most recent episodes or so. So you can do an experiment if you want. Just go to Google, type in Mixergy Brian Clark. It'll bring up his two interviews with Brian Clark. When you click on that, if you are not an email subscriber, there's what looks like a video and a play button in the middle. And when you click play, it actually is an email opt-in that opens up right there. If you subscribe right there, then it kicks you back to the same page. And now you see like the player for your podcast, which to me is really, really, really smart. But I didn't have the chops to do it at the time.
It's a great idea.
And I'd actually kind of forgotten about it. Now I'm thinking about maybe going back and trying this because it's so this is for anybody who searches it and they're looking for the person. They find you organically, which is what Jared was talking about because you've optimized it. But now getting that payment via email. And those emails are golden when it comes to selling courses, to selling any sort of education or anything really to your audience. So you could think of it in that way, that you could use your archives to really start to build up your email list quite rapidly. And then it will sort of help you and sort of alleviate that feeling of you are getting payment for your archives, but they're also getting all of the benefit that Jared just talked about for searchability and people actually tracking you down and finding you. So that was just something I thought of during that, Jared, and I wanted to sort of interject because that is a really sort of interesting way to go about it, and it might be something you might want to try.
That's a great idea, and that I think is such an important point for this entire episode is, you know, it's not just this binary question of, okay, do I have to leave all of my episodes freely available? And if I do that, then can I not do anything else with them? Because there are so many ways just like that where you can leave your episodes out there in iTunes and other podcast apps that people may search in, but still do other stuff with them. And I just went through, I mean, in just a couple of minutes, just listed out a bunch of bullet points. Johnny, you just added one to it right there, which I think is brilliant. You know, you can also package episodes together into a free mini course that either you put out as an LMS or, you know, that you make as an email course. And, you know, when you think about this, you know, think about, Julie, as your archive starts to get bigger and bigger, what's the biggest challenge for a new listener to figure out where to start, to figure out, you know, which of those 75 episodes, which of the five are most pertinent to them, you know, to their specific issue? And I think, you know, Johnny's example earlier of taking a top 10 out of 300, that's a great way to kind of curate it down and make a big archive seem inviting because now, okay, I can go check out the top 10. And then maybe once you listen to those 10, you know, now you feel a little bit more comfortable and you go back through and you find some other episodes. So that's really what you want to think about is you can actually add value that people will, you know, provide their email address in exchange for, say, or subscribe to a new feed in exchange for, just by helping to simplify a big archive. So you want to think about that. Some other ideas, you can use podcast episodes as part of a membership, even a paid membership. Because again, you have that value in curating your archive, letting people know what's there, showing people where to start, putting them into a coherent order, et cetera. You could also create separate podcast feeds about niches within your niche, like Johnny did. Brian Clark, with his Unemployable podcast brand, created one about email marketing. And so you could do that, Julie. You could take five episodes about a specific topic. It doesn't have to be top 10, but take it about a specific topic, you know, and then make it the Love Food Guide to X. And of course, you know, try to make that a searchable topic that people are looking for. You can also rerun episodes. And as your archive gets bigger and bigger, this is something that you may want to think about doing. And you can do this either as part of your weekly episode or as a bonus. So take really popular podcasts like Planet Money and Freakonomics, for example. A lot of times they will pull episodes out of their archive, rerun them, Now, they will typically record a new intro, maybe add an update to it, so change the context a little bit. But the full meat of the episode is going to be the same, and obviously it's going to take you less time to prepare an episode like that. So that makes sure that new people who have come to your show get some of your good stuff that might otherwise be buried in the archive and that they don't find. We talked about creating, you know, a top 10 episodes list. You can also create lists of kind of your cornerstone topics or basics that you can then include in your navigation. So if there are three or four topics, like for example, with the new Sites podcast, the four topics are content design, technology, and strategy. Eventually, once I get through the first cycle of, you know, each one of those, or maybe go through 20 episodes, so I've got five episodes of each one, we'll then organize them on the site. So if people are interested just in the design episodes, they can get to those real quickly. So that's something else that you can do with them. You can also curate paid course lessons from insight that's gleaned from the episodes. And, you know, maybe take a specific topic and then you pull highlights out of episodes that talk about that topic. So people would otherwise have to go listen to every single episode about that topic. But again, you're basically providing additional value by curating. So even though the episodes are freely available, you're adding value to it by putting it into a different context. And finally, you could use a site like Lumen5, lumen5.com. Johnny, I don't know if you've looked at this site. Chris Garrett.
I haven't.
Yeah, Chris Garrett gave me this tip. And it basically allows you to create short videos from, like, particularly compelling. You use text, so you would basically put in a blog post or put in your transcript, but then it makes it really easy to create a compelling visual. It's better to just go check it out than have me explain it, but it works better than I imagined, and I'm going to be doing some more stuff with it. But that, again, is another way that you could do more with these episodes. So really think outside the box, you know, take some of these ideas, take some other ideas, but these are all things that you can do while keeping that archive freely available and being able to give yourself and your show the benefit of all the search that people will do to find those episodes. And, you know, for the really crazy people, and these are the people that you want listening to your show, that will go back, Julie, and they find your show now and they go back and they listen to all 75 episodes, or they go back through your archive and they pick out the 10 that look really good to them. And I've done that with a number of parenting shows. I may not have binge listened to all the episodes. There was one healthy eating podcast, you know, that I found it, you know, in the mid 30s. And I went back through and I probably downloaded about 15 of the episodes to go back and listen to them. Wouldn't have been able to do that if they weren't all there freely available. So, and I am a diehard listener of that show now. And you want to be able to cater to those new listeners and help turn them into diehard listeners and give them that ability to go back and pick and choose what they want to listen to out of your archive. So
when you found that show, Jared, just out of interest, when you found that show and there was, say, 30 episodes and you went back through it, like, were you on your phone and just looking at headlines, like titles, or did you go deeper?
No, I was on my phone, and I have an Android, so I use the Podcast Addict app, and it's really nice because you can just scroll through and then it's got the download button right there. So as soon as I find one I like, I just download it real quick, and then I've got a whole bunch of downloads I can then go listen to. But yeah, I basically just looked through headlines because there were some specific tips about healthy eating or some specific topics that I was interested in and some stuff that I had already done research on and didn't need any more answers to. So I could skip those. But, you know, specific stuff about the kind of the age level that I was at, I wanted to listen to very specifically. So, yeah. And the headlines were really good there. So it helped. And every now and then I would click in and look at the description if I wanted to dig a little deeper. But that's why, you know, having a very descriptive title and then having a description right at the top within the first few sentences that clearly states what the episode about is so important.
I love it.
Yeah.
Very cool, man. This has been good.
This has been good. Yeah, no, it's a great question from Julie. And if you have a question listening right now that you'd like us to address in a future edition of The Showrunner, the way to get it to us is to actually just reply to one of the weekly emails that we send out. So if you're already on the email list, we send those emails out. Just reply to one of them. We look at every email that comes in, and we will add your question to the many that have already been submitted by fellow showrunners like you. And if you are not on that email list yet, you want to go to showrunner.fm, and you will be able to get on the email list. And it's not just to be able to reply to that message and send us a question. As I mentioned at the top, you get a lot of benefits by being on that list too. You get our free report, The Beginner's Guide to Launching a Remarkable Podcast. which is a simple no-frills nine-step plan to getting your podcast off the ground. And you'll also gain access to kind of a mini course, an email course, that forces you to ask yourself some tough questions that all aspiring and current showrunners should be asking themselves regularly. And we get replies to those as well. And those have been really interesting to look through. So you get all of that, plus the ability to submit your questions to us. Plus, we will let you know when the course is coming, once we set a date, and once we're ready. So for all those reasons, go to showrunner.fm, get on that email list. All right, Johnny. Good to be back in the saddle with you.
I agree. It is good. It feels great, and I look forward to answering more questions.
It's kind of an odd visual now when I think about it, because that would suggest that we're both in the same saddle, which would be odd. I would think that we would actually be riding different horses.
Well, yeah.
Just wanted to clarify, like we're not...
In the same saddle.
But isn't that the isn't that the quote? Isn't that the expression? Back in the saddle?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I think you could each be in your own saddle, side by side on your horses, galloping through the wilderness. I don't think you have to necessarily be in the same saddle, Jared.
By the way, if someone photoshops a picture of that, we will answer any question that you want next episode. Just tweet it to us at Jared Morris at John Naster.
Wow.
I sure hope we don't.
I hope we have a Photoshop expert in the audience.
Yes. That would be wonderful. All right, everybody. Thank you for being here. It's great to be back. And we'll be here next week with another brand new episode answering your questions.
Take care.